The Breakfast Club.
Adam White, speaking of domination, that's what he does around these parts. In fact, that's what he does everywhere. He just dominates the world, our man. He's got maybe a new shirt on. We'll see. Whitey, good morning.
It is a new shirt. It is. Hey, I was thinking of you yesterday.
It's nice of you.
Damien Oliver was on with the guys on Racing Pulse. Did you hear this?
No, I didn't hear this. I saw a social media video of Damien in the basket, in the hot air balloon.
We've got to replay it. We've got to find it.
All right. Well, Coondog, find Damien Oliver, please.
No, so it was about 10:15, thereabouts, yesterday.
Yep.
On RSN, talking about how he feared for his life in the balloon, and I thought of you. He was genuinely petrified.
No, there's vision floating around. Have you seen the vision?
No, I must confess, I haven't seen the vision.
There is vision of someone in the basket. Now they might be a racing person. I'm not quite sure. It didn't look like someone I knew. Might just be a basket person, who had Ollie in the basket with him as they were descending into Flemington.
And it sort of went a bit awry.
Well, it was okay. It was a bit of a mess, bit of a sticky landing, but it was fine. But as they're coming down, we've got the selfie sort of video going on. Ollie is cowering in the corner like a scared little puppy dog, not looking up, not talking to anyone, just on his, sitting down, crouched over with his knees and head in his knees, going, just get me off this thing, just get me off this thing. Fair to say, he didn't appreciate the moment.
No.
Perhaps as much as I would have.
No, it was really interesting listening to him yesterday, and I thought of you, thinking, here, you hot air balloon, obsessive.
I love him.
I know.
And one day I'm going to go in one.
Absolutely no way known I'd go in a basket high above a city.
I'm going to be in the basket.
Someone
tie my basket case, so it'll work okay.
And after hearing Ollie yesterday, I was very much comfortable with my decision to stay out of a basket.
But hang on.
High in the sky.
You only heard from one person, one negative story. There'd be a million positive stories.
Often we hear the news where we've got a situation where a balloon's down in some backyard
often.
Somewhere.
Give us a spell. Often. Let's have a listen to Damien Oliver. He was speaking on RSN yesterday as part of the launch of the All-Star Mile. Didn't go well for Damien.
Very happy to be back on land, just say that.
So take us through the final, let's just call it the final furlong of the balloon ride.
We crash landed about the 400 metre mark on the track and wasn't looking good when we were coming in sideways, took out one of the poles and the balloon sort of pierced itself on the pole and the basket dragged itself across the track. We took out some running rail. Let's just say I'm glad it's over.
Yeah, see, that's told you.
No, they're not supposed to be landing on
type activity.
They're not made to land X marks the spot sort of stuff. That's not how they operate them. That's not how it works. So putting a stunt together with a balloon like was put together yesterday. If you want precision navigation and precision driving, hot air balloons aren't your go.
Another person I know that went on a hot air balloon was the newsreader here a long time ago called Leslie Yeomans. I think she fell out of a hot air balloon or there was a massive crash or something.
So you're not real sure about this story. You're just making stuff up.
It was a long time ago.
That's what you're doing.
Hey, I've got a couple of things to throw at you.
An agenda is what you've got at the moment against the balloon industry, and I won't have it.
I've got a couple of things to throw at you today.
Do you reckon it'd be a good balloon morning? It should be a good balloon
morning.
It should
be. And you can get involved in this if you want. 0416 90 50 52 is the text. 1300 652 927 is the number. Are you struggling with hot weather or is it just summer, so get on with it?
No, it's summer. Get on with it. Jump in the pool.
So you're not having any trouble sleeping or it's just getting to the point where, I'm not saying it's like 48 degrees, but just the constant days over 30 with no real respite moving forward. Is it me getting old and not coping with it?
Yep.
I'm not overly fussed by it, but there's others in the house that are. Or is it, like, because usually you would get a cool change at some point.
We'll get one at some point.
And the cycle will start again, but it's just, like, constant.
We'll get one at some point. No, I think it's just summer, isn't it? I remember.
Well, I think it is, yes.
Back when I was a boy, which would have been similar to the time you were a boy, like, it was, summers were stinking hot for months on end. There was no cool change. And there was no respite from the heat. It was summer. It's what it was. It got really hot. These days, well, for the last decade, we've had patches of real strong heat, and then you'd have your cooler days and your rain and all sort of stuff. But this is just summer.
Well, I think it is, but I was criticised in my house yesterday for saying, get on with things, it's summer, it's meant to be hot.
So that came from...
I said that. That was my comment.
Said that?
Yes.
And you got criticised?
Yes. Oh, no, this is getting me down. It's hot and all this sort of complaining going on in our house. And then it made me think, is this abnormal? I mean, it's clearly been very dry. And we've talked about
that. Yeah, we talked about that.
It's very, very dry. I hate to know what my water bill is at the moment. But, yeah.
No, I think it's just summer. Are you concerned about your TikTok? Is that what you do?
No, not at all.
Are you sure?
As I said, I'm concerned about my water bill, but I'm not concerned about my beautiful carpet-like grass.
One lonely balloon up in G-Town, says Cole the curator. One.
See,
in the morning like this.
The cooch, Daniel, loves the hot weather. As long as it's got water going.
Is TikTok a cooch?
Yeah, of course it is.
Oh, that's not really grass. Like, it's like, who was talking about that on the Big
Bash? It's not really grass.
Who was talking about?
Matt Renshaw.
Yeah,
and he made a very good point.
Lawnies.
Well, I don't know what they're called, but he made a really good point that buffalo grass is pretty sort of an average sort of grass. And I've had that in the past.
I would have thought cooch was just pretty straightforward, sort of, you know, just put it down, it grows and runs and does stuff and
has
a great time.
No,
pretty straightforward.
That's why your grass looks like yours does and mine looks like mine.
You mean magnificent?
There needs to be some tender loving care and some understanding of the grass to know. Anyway, so my second question for you is...
So do you accept that?
What?
That it's just hot in the
summer? Yes, I am. And I feel better about that because I was being criticised last night for saying, get on with things. It's summer. This is what happens. And February is the hottest month of the year and that's next month.
Well, you know what? I've been talking about this for years. Years. Literally years. That we need to push the seasons back a month. The world's changed. The environment has adapted and evolved. And we need to start summer in January. Push them all back. We just work really easily. 3 months, January, February, March is your summer, and you work from there.
I'm sorry, September is not winter.
Sorry?
September is not winter.
Well, it might as well be. It rains enough.
Nah.
It rains enough.
No, you can't have September as winter.
My word, you can. We're coming out the back end of September, which is final stuff. That's your back end of winter as it starts to blossom into spring. It's perfect. A month back is what we need to do.
How would you be... if you lived in the Ukraine at the moment and you knew that there was 127,000 Russian troops on your border, so you could have trouble sleeping because it's hot, or you could have trouble sleeping because there's 127,000 Russian troops on your doorstep ready to come in at any moment. Would you struggle to sleep at night? Or would they be used to that sort of thing and...
I don't know how used to it they would be. What I would do is I'd get a coffee cart real quick and just go around and see if they needed coffee. We can make a fortune. It's a real business opportunity. No, that is not cool what's going on over there. I wouldn't be overly comfortable. I'd struggle sleeping that night, I reckon. Yeah, I reckon I'd struggle with that one. The heat I can get through, the 127,000 troops on the doorstep, slightly different scenario, I would have thought.
It's interesting, I was reading on...
Although I don't think they're coming for me. They're not coming for me, though, are they?
Well, who knows? They're coming for the entire country, I think. But imagine, people have been told to leave, and there's people in the Ukrainian government going, hey, don't panic. It's all fine. No dramas. Well, overreacting. You got 127,000 Russian troops on your doorstep.
Yeah, no, I think there'd be an element of concern, I think, from a government perspective.
Right.
On that.
The next question I've got for you. There's a suggestion that Tom Brady might actually retire this time after Tampa Bay lost. And I heard you talking before about the amazing games in the NFL, and obviously Matt McBride will join us shortly. If he was to retire, he will go down as the greatest, at least the greatest quarterback of all time, one of the greatest American athletes of all time,
sports
just people. By purely and simply with what he's done.
Sports people. Yeah.
Sports people, whatever.
Yep.
Doesn't matter.
What sort of does.
But I think he's replaceable. I think as good as he is, and he's great to watch, and I don't want him to retire because I love watching him play, there's enough other good quarterbacks that, you know, that do similar things to what he does.
Right.
So my question is, gut feel, just first answers, who are the athletes that you think are actually irreplaceable sports people?
Geez. It's a broad question.
No,
it's a broad question. But that's
I want, I know, but I want that initial reaction of people that no longer, so people that either no longer play or don't play at the level that they used to in their chosen sport, where you go, you know what? As a result of you retiring, things aren't the same. So, and things, and you'll never, there will never be another one of them.
Oh, you know who comes to mind first up?
This is what I'm saying. I want that first reaction.
Shane Warne.
That's exactly what I said.
Now, it's a very narrow focus, of course, in Australia from a domestic, well, international sport, I suppose. It's a narrow focus, but immediately that's where I go.
Yep.
I don't think there'll ever be another Shane Warne.
Yep. And so when he bowled, you wanted to watch because it was fun to watch because he did things that no one else could do. And I was...
Well, there was always something happening.
Yes, that's right. And
it
was
dramatic.
I was over the summer break because the kids get on YouTube, you know.
My word, they do. And they live on YouTube, the kids.
I was showing my kids some of Shane Warne's great spells. 94-95 in Brisbane against England. He took 8 wickets and I think the season either before or after against South Africa where he had Daryl Cullen and, you know, a walking wicket with a flipper and all that. And doing all these things that...
Walking wicket.
But doing all these things that has never been done since and has never been done before.
Yep.
And you kind of think that how... clearly, cricket is not... not as fun to watch when he's not playing. Now, when you've got Coley and you've got Smith and you've got, you know, maybe De Villiers and these guys, Tendulkar, you will always get good batsmen that are good to watch. But there's never been another Shane Warne where you sit there and you go, I could sit here for 2 hours and just watch him bowl because it's fun.
Yep, he was different gravy, no doubt about that. And leg spin's a different art again. And there's the whole wrist spin thing in cricket I find fascinating, I must admit. Well, SMS us or give us a call, 1300 652 927 or 0416 90 50 52. Who are your irreplaceable athletes across the planet?
Because the only other one I thought of was Roger Federer because of the way he plays tennis. So... I still maintain that Novak Djokovic is as good as him, probably better than him, and Nadal's obviously not far behind as well. But to sit down on the couch and watch tennis, he was the one that's so watchable where he's just entertaining for what he does. And yeah, you can go and watch Tsitsipas last night winning 5, or you can watch whatever, whoever, but no one did it the way Roger did it. And tennis will be poorer off for him not being there. I'm not sure there'll ever be another one like him. The suggestion on the SMS is Michael Jordan. Maybe Michael Jordan, but you've got kind of LeBron James and Steph Curry that do similar things to what he does, but maybe not the same. But
MJ
similar.
Probably works. I think MJ fits this. I think LeBron's a different beast. Altogether, talk about, you know, the greatest of all time sort of stuff. It's a different conversation, but like irreplaceable in terms of when they're gone, an element of enjoyment for the fan goes. Well, that certainly fits in with Warney. MJ would be the same. Yeah, we'll keep coming through. Tiger is the obvious one in golf.
Yes, yes.
That's come through off the SMS. Yes. Thank you for that.
Yes.
Tiger is different gravy.
Yes.
He does different things.
He does. And from an Australian golf perspective, and this has come through as well, what Greg Norman did for Australian golf whenever he was playing on, you know, whether it be the Masters here in Australia or the Australian Open, you know, that famous Greg Norman Sunday charge.
Yes.
You know, then it was the whole package with Greg Norman. I don't think there's, as much as we all love Adam Scott, and Adam Scott won the Masters, it's completely different to what Greg Norman was to Australian golf, much like Tiger Woods was to world golf.
Yep.
But yeah, as I said, I just thought of it because of Tom Brady, and as you know, obviously being a big New England Patriots fan, I was sad when Brady couldn't quite get it done yesterday. I mean, he kind of did, and then he was let down by his defense to letting that easy touchdown towards the end. Or the easy field goal.
In fairness, the defense was horrific. All day.
Yes.
They couldn't stop the Rams.
Yeah.
All day.
But I think that the NFL will cope without Brady.
Yeah.
I'm not sure cricket has coped without Warne, and I'm not sure tennis can cope as well either without Federer.
Cricket's coped without Warne.
It's coped, but it's not as good.
Is it as good? No, there's a certain amount of enjoyment that you don't get, because Warne was fun. He made the game fun because you would be glued to the box because something would happen. He would make something happen. That's what great athletes do, great competitors and sports people do. They make something happen. Tiger makes stuff happen. Greg Norman made stuff happen. Warne does make stuff happen. Tom Brady makes stuff happen. He does.
But you know, the others do similar things.
Yeah.
Maybe not as well under pressure or whatever. But you know, the flipper that Shane Warne used to bowl, and the way he could it was some most extraordinary things that he could do that no one else could do, and no one else has done since. I mean, you're not going to get as excited about sitting on the couch watching Nathan Lyon play his trade from one end and jam an end.
But I'll get excited about Scotty Boland coming on from the other end, 6 for 7. If he does that for the next 10 years, I'll be happy. Paddy Cummins is a bowler I would sit there and watch lots of.
Yeah, but there's others that can do just as pretty much what he can do around the world.
I think that's right. How many do what Paddy Cummins does? Give me 3.
Yeah, but we've seen it before and we'll see it again.
I just think that tennis has done a really poor job with accepting personalities in the past. You know, I think they've kind of really only marketed 3 players for the last decade, and now it's kind of caught up with them, so hence they've tried to, you know, push some of the next-gen guys, which I think some of them are really exciting. I really like the two young Canadians, I think, can really do some special things in the sport. But tennis has really, you know, struggled to embrace different personalities, like, and people go about it differently. Like, something about Thanasi, when I watch him play singles, that glues me to the TV, whether he's losing, whether he's winning. It's just the way he goes about it. And I think, you know, tennis needs to embrace that more. You know, you look at the match against me and Medvedev, you couldn't have two polar opposite kind of personalities going up against it. But the actual quality of tennis was still to a pretty good level that I thought, and it was fun. It was like, at the end of the day, I'm going to shake the man's hand and say, too good. Like, you were too good at the end of the day. But the match was fun to watch, and I think tennis needs to just push that, I think, a lot. Otherwise,
dying.
Okay. Yeah, it's in trouble.
Craig Gabriel joins us on the program to give us the latest from Melbourne Park. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning.
How are you feeling, just by the way?
Again, I feel fine. It's just the voice, that's all. I was actually starting to worry that things might hit me today, because speaking to a couple of friends who've had it, a colleague in Sydney as well, and he said, the first couple of days, you know, he felt generally okay, but he said, on the third and fourth day, it could barely get out of bed. So this would be, I was tested positive on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So this could have been the day that I would have been in that situation. But so far, touch wood, and I'm doing that, so far so good.
Are you saying on the third day you rose again?
Yeah.
Just checking.
Let there be light.
Nice work from you. Just on that grab from Nick Kyrgios, he was talking after his doubles game with Tanasi the other day.
Yeah.
About personalities in tennis. I found it intriguing to get that level of conversation from Nick, I must admit, and that analysis from him. And it's hard to disagree with what he said, isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, also, while I agree with him as far as the promotion of the younger players, I think there's been a reasonable amount of it, but they have all the younger players who are incredible talents have also got to start proving themselves a lot more on a more consistent basis. The results are now starting to come up, and we're starting to see that, you know, those guys really emerging and being talked about a bit more. But it was still so dominated by the big three. They were not necessarily having consistent wins over those big three for extra recognition, if you get what I'm saying. So, there's two ways on this. Yes, the tours could be doing a bit more to promote those guys, but the tourists will say, yes, we're doing, or certainly the men will say, yeah, we're doing that, but with things like the next-gen finals that are played in Milan every year, that have seen the emergence of Alex Dimon or Stefanos Tsitsipas, and Felix as well. So, but they've also need to start getting consistent results and winning more and more and more tournaments, and big tournaments to highlight themselves. And we're starting to see that happen now.
I think it's a really interesting point you make, Craig, and I do agree with you, but it's that balance, I guess, around the personalities in the game and getting to know the tennis players as people. And I think we're certainly starting to see that more and more with Nick. And then you marry that up with the validity of them as tennis players that win. Because I think there's this big thing with Kyrgios at the moment of being an entertainer, which he absolutely is.
Yeah.
But he doesn't win a lot.
No, but I think with Nick, you know, I think his time is probably passed on that, maybe. Hopefully not. Whereas the others are wanting to win. That's the thing. The younger ones, this next generation, are incredibly exciting to watch. So, but yeah, then there needs to be more consistency on this, and also provide way more direct access to the players. A lot of the times, managers need to sit to one side, because the international media don't necessarily get that much time on a one-to-one basis with a lot of these players in an effort to promote them.
Yes, but I think what's happening now, and this is across all sports, is that the athletes are promoting themselves through their own social media platforms, which is kind of, you know, if you like, controlled in the sense that it's what they want to give up or they want to talk about, as opposed to the way it's been done traditionally. And I'm not sure, this goes back to this whole Naomi Osaka situation from the past, I'm not sure necessarily we'll ever get back to where we were. It might be more where we're heading.
Well, quite possibly. Yeah, I don't think you're very wrong on that, Adam. I think that's certainly a situation where the players want to control a bit more. And then, you know, with them trying to control a bit more, you get dribs and drabs, because then they feel they don't want to get bogged down all the time promoting themselves, or, you know, they just want to go out and play a match or do their training, or, you know, just take it easy, but for themselves. So that it works it has to work in a lot of ways.
It's an interesting conversation, I reckon, about how tennis markets its athletes. We'll talk more about another day, perhaps. Let's go back to what happened yesterday afternoon/evening. It was a late start for Alex Diminar, the demon, the last male standing in the singles draw. He's now outski after Jannik Sinner had his way, 7-6, 6-3, 7-6, 6-3, 6-4. Craig, we spoke about this game yesterday in the build-up and the chance for Alex to get through, but your man Sinner was pretty bloody good.
Yeah, he was. And the two women's matches before were the ones that delayed everything, because they went forever and ever. It was surprised how late things did get, but Sinner was just pretty good. I think what I was saying was that I thought the first set was going to be tight, and while Alex wouldn't give up, Sinner would get the confidence after that first set and just build and go on from there. And I think that's pretty much really what happened. I mean, Alex, I asked him, I said, if he had a bit of a letdown, or did he feel a little bit deflated after a tight first set where he had quite a few chances? And he was pretty good about it. He said, I don't believe so. He thought what made the difference, the conditions changed on court, because the shadow came across the court towards the end of the first set. And that changed things. It made it a bit cooler and allowed Sinner to take a little bit more advantage of that. And he was able to push through. But, he said also at the beginning of the second set, he had chances and didn't capitalize.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a shame in a sense, because he has shown so many encouraging signs, improvement in the past period of time. But I still think that's just where he's at. When he comes up against a guy that's got the weapons that someone like a Sinner has got, that counterpuncher type of Leighton Hewitt style can only kind of get him so far, maybe.
Yeah, well, this is pretty much what I was also saying, is that, you know, he's not going to give up. He's going to give it everything he's got. He's got his speed and his placement and all that. But when you have a guy like Sinner, who's so tall and has got such reach and so much power, it's going to make it very difficult for somebody like Alex, who's even, I think he's a little bit shorter than Hewitt, or about the same, but he's got a huge heart. But that power is so dominating. and that's what causes the issue.
Mm.
And some other men's action yesterday, well, last night, Stefanos Tsitsipas took five. It took him a while to get over your man Fritzy from the States.
Seriously, the two night matches last night, they went forever. Tsitsipas over Fritz. Fritz was up 2-1, and it was 4-6, 6-4, 4-6, 6-3, 6-4. I don't know if you saw Tsitsi's on-court media conference, conference, or interview rather, but he was a bit dazzled with it all, and he couldn't get his words out, just like me just now. He eventually said, oh, I'm so tired, I can't think at the moment, you know. So, it was draining. He gets so focused during a match that he even forgets the score.
Well, he's got to beat Sinner to get through to the semis if he wants to progress. And Daniil Medvedev and Felix Auger-Aliassime got the chocolates as well. And they'll meet in the quarterfinals as well.
Yeah, Daniil was getting a bit antsy in the match yesterday. He was a bit fed up with things. And he admitted later that, you know, it was wrong that he was in that situation. But a few things had annoyed him before. And it wasn't any one specific thing. Everything just built up. And he just exploded a few times yesterday during the match. But he got through it. He didn't like the fact that he was on Margaret Court Arena. And I think, you know, maybe he's got a bit of a point that he's the highest seed. He's a finalist here from last year. He's a major winner. That why wouldn't he be on Rod Laver Arena? He's up against Auger-Aliassime, who had a very good win over Marin Cilic. So we'll see how things progress. He's played Auger-Aliassime twice before and won both. But, for my money, really, yesterday the story was Elise Cornet.
Sorry, I want to ask, because I'm a bit of a fan of her, and she's been around a long time.
Mm.
I think it's 36 or 37 Grand Slam appearances, and finally she's got through to a quarterfinal for the very first time.
63.
Yeah.
63. Nobody beats her 63 times in a row.
No. She's been at every single major since the start of 2007. Every single major that's been played. And I say that because Wimbledon 2020 was cancelled.
Yeah.
So 63, and then she reaches a quarterfinal for the first time. There's no doubt that she was emotional. You have to figure that was going to happen. She was so thrilled, so excited, and you really felt pretty happy for her. She's a feisty one. I mean, I've seen her in certain matches, I mean, playing Serena and all that, and she can get really riled up. She's quite flamboyant. But that was a wonderful moment for her yesterday. And the on-court interview with Jelena Dokic was the best on-court interview at this tournament, this year's Australian Open, but in my mind, for a very long time. The tear fest that happened, I just thought it was a great moment on the court, the way she acknowledged Jelena. After such a big win, to have that mindset to actually comment on Jelena and saying that she so wanted to play Jelena, 13, 14 years ago when there was a chance that they would in the quarterfinals of the Australian Open. So, and it never happened because Cornet lost. So there was all that sort of stuff that was pretty fascinating.
Let's talk some NFL, because what's happened across the last couple of days has been nothing short of outstanding. It's been great sporting theatre. Doesn't matter if you love the game or not. If you love sport, you love what's going on. Matt McBryer, a former NFL punter who, I'm sure, still loves the game. He joins us on the line. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, fellas. How are we doing?
Mate, we are well, but we're still recovering from what's been an unbelievable weekend of playoff football. Have you ever seen anything like it?
No. That's as good as the NFL gets. I think most pundits over here are saying that, you had exceptional games on the Saturday here, and you were hoping that Sunday could possibly match them, and it finished with a bang. I mean, to see the game last night go into overtime and the Chiefs pull it off was as good as it gets. And no one wanted it to finish.
Yeah. Well, it was quite remarkable watching it all unfold, and you with a bit more of an insight would have been engrossed, I'm sure. But there were storylines in every game, and they kept evolving through not only the start of the game, but through the contest as well. Which game stood out for you as the real statement or the real one that said this is playoff football at its best?
Well, playoff football, the best game I thought was the Bills and the Chiefs. And you just have what people are now comparing, hopefully going forward, will be, you know, my generation or have seen like the Mannings and the Bradys, you know, go at it, you know, over their entire careers. And we're sort of looking at this new generation coming through with Mahomes and Allen being like, okay, they're gonna lead the league going forward, and that's the hope there. That game was just exceptional. Two quarterbacks and the defense for the Bills is the best in the league, and they had absolutely no chance to stop Mahomes and his receivers. So it was phenomenal. It was equally phenomenal to see, you know, both Rodgers and Brady go out of the playoffs, being that, you know, they were definitely favoured home games. And I just thought that from the standpoint of the football, the level was amazing, and we've just been it was a blessing to watch it all.
I've got a couple of questions for you, Matt, and they're easy but difficult at the same time. Do you think Aaron Rodgers will stay at Green Bay?
I don't think so.
Right, and do you think Tom Brady will go on, or do you think he'll stop?
I think he'll go on. I think he's got a good enough team around him to be competitive. He's got a great offensive line, and they, you know, the Rams got hot, and but they almost clawed it back. I mean, they created, I think, three turnovers in the last quarter there. I mean, freakish sort of turnovers where you see a running back who never really fumbles, who you know, fumbled twice, and a receiver who I don't think has ever fumbled in his career fumbled as well. So I would think that Brady, you know, is going to believe that he's going to have a good enough squad around him to get to that point again next season. And he has talked about, like, you know, 45 being sort of probably it, which would be one more season. But Rodgers is the one. Rodgers was coy last year about, you know, he gets a little upset that they, you know, go and draft for the future, and they did that a couple of years ago. And I just think he might be ready for a change, or maybe even retirement.
Yeah, so, I mean, Rodgers is an interesting story because he's been in the news for a number of different reasons in the last 12 months, whether he was going to commit to Green Bay, then the whole vaccination thing. So right. They lose at home. Was it his fault, or was it that his team wasn't good enough? I mean, it's obviously never just one thing. I mean, was he really disappointing in your view in that game, and was the reason for not winning at home?
Good point. He wasn't as good as you'd expect. I mean, he didn't throw a touchdown. He was still quite efficient in his passing. I think he only had maybe nine or so in completion, 29 thereabouts. Really tough conditions when you get snow in Green Bay, especially when it just starts to fall. The field has these heated pipes that run through it, so it doesn't freeze. And so the surface gets really slick. So it gets, you know, for the receivers to be able to get in and out of their breaks, it gets rather, you know, very slippery. So it definitely took away their passing. I mean, Devonta Adams, I think, still almost had 100 yards receiving, but they just didn't look as dangerous. And, you know, they would have benefited from, you know, a better surface. I mean, San Fran doesn't really scare you on the offensive side of the ball. They just get after it. They just get after you on the D-line. But they do get their, you know, the ball to their playmakers as well. They're very good at getting it to Deebo Samuel and Kittle. So, I would think Rodgers might be thinking that maybe better days lie ahead elsewhere for him.
Callum Wilkie is a big part of the Securita lineup these days. Pretty bloody good player, I reckon, and I'm sure he'd be pretty keen for a big 2022. He's on the line getting ready for another big season. Callum, good morning.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. Has COVID hit your team?
Yeah, it has. It's probably hit every team, I would imagine. But, yeah, I reckon we've had about almost half, a bit over half of the players had it. Players that did have it, most of them got over the Chrissy break, so they're back training. But, yeah, it just sort of messed around training for a little bit.
Yeah, well, I imagine it would have. Half your squad's out, or a good chunk of your squad is out. So did it affect what you're able to do as a team in preparation for the season with your on-field stuff?
Yeah, a little bit, just in terms of numbers, you know, because yeah. The staff wanted to make sure that those players were, I guess, back to normal in terms of their fitness levels and ready to come back into training. So, yeah, for a little bit it affected the numbers, but we just adjusted the drills and training in terms of the numbers to what we want to get out of it.
How do you feel you're going at the moment? So what are we? Just a couple of days left or a few days left in January. So games aren't too far away. Do you feel that the team is progressing the way you wanted it to?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, pre-season's probably been quite a lot harder than previous seasons. It's something we sort of spoke about at the end of last year is to sort of have a real crack in pre-season. I guess, you know, a lot of clubs have that same thought, but we can sort of tell, you know, a few of the players that we want improving and the team improving. So, no, it's good signs early.
Because it was an interesting year for St Kilda because you'd obviously had the good year the year before. You made the finals and it didn't quite work out for you last year for a variety of different reasons. Do you feel that there's that extra edge in the group to make sure you get back to where you were kind of tracking?
Yeah, there is. And I mean, last year sort of gave us, I guess, a bit of a reality check. You know, wins don't come easy, finals don't come easy, and you've got to work bloody hard to get there. And, you know, with sort of a young and experienced group and not many players who have played finals, it sort of, I guess, yeah, gave us all a bit of a reality check in terms of what it needs, what we need to do to get there.
Is there a theme that sort of Rats is running with throughout the summer as something to cling on to for the group to build towards this season coming?
Yeah, a little bit. We sort of touched on it, I guess, halfway through last year where we had, you know, a few meetings in terms of the inconsistency that we had for the first half of the year, and it's sort of just based off competitiveness and team first and sort of, I guess, what you can do to help someone else get better and help the team get better. And I feel like a lot of the boys are, you know, starting to really get that in terms of the fact that we just, you know, you want to do something to make us all better. And that's how we're going to improve, not just individually, but as a team.
How are you going to improve? What are you focusing on for this season?
A few different things. I've, you know, it's only my fourth year, so I feel like I still sort of haven't reached my potential in terms of one as a player, but the fitness levels in terms of getting stronger, putting on a bit of weight, getting fitter, but sort of just want to develop a bit more of the leadership side as well in terms of how I can help the team, just help anyone get better, and it's something I'm really passionate about.
Have you played every game since you started?
Yeah, I have.
That's a pretty bloody good effort.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Duck to water sort of stuff for Cal.
63 on the trot.
Yeah, it's very impressive. Hey, have you had much to do yet with Ernie Merrick? I thought yes. That was a really interesting story about how Ernie's helping Rats in a few different sort of areas of leadership and mentorship. What has he been around the club much?
Yeah, Ernie's been around the club. He sort of not sticks to himself, but sort of just sort of shadows Rats and, you know, he's been a mentor to him in terms of his coaching. Doesn't, I guess, give his thoughts to the playing group. He's obviously probably quite just an onlooker in terms of his opinions to Rats. But, nah, he's a good bloke. Had a few chats to him. Obviously done wonderful things. So, nah, he's going to be a great help.
Can you understand him?
Yeah. I can.
Well, he's just got that voice. Yeah.
He does. It's
yeah. I know.
Thick accent from Ernie.
Yep, definitely.
But a fantastic leader of people. What about some of the kids coming through? You've gone to the draft pretty heavily this season. Some young ones coming through. Anyone that's caught your eye ahead of 2022 that the Saints fans need to be looking out for?
Yeah, a few have. It's nice to sort of have a bit of injection of youth. We sort of haven't really gone down that draft path in the last sort of three years since I've been here. So the energy they bring, they're just eager and excited to learn and be part of AFL footy. So now, if you Josiah Cole, he's been his forward pressure at trainings, being elite. People have probably been taking it for granted, and a lot of people have been getting run down by him. Mitch Owens and is a big boy, and he's going to be pretty useful as an inside mid. But yeah, a lot of them are just eager to learn and excited to be here, which just gives the group a bit of a lift.
I wonder what Chloe Malloy's up to today, because she is very, very important to this Collingwood football team, who are 3-0 kicking off the AFLW season. We're down in Geelong on Friday night and won by 11 points. Malloy comes back in and she kicks 2 goals, 2. That's 14 points. So without her, they can't win. She joins us on the line. Chloe, good morning.
Good morning, Harv.
I'm just doing the math. You can't dispute it.
No, I like it, and I will be slip-slopping today also, and hope you are with that head of yours.
Yes, I will certainly be doing that, all wearing the bucket hat, as I quite like to do. Hey, it's been a pretty good start, been a dramatic start for the Magpies in a lot of ways. You've had some COVID impact with some of your key players, yourself included. You've had the co-skipper go down with a Rico, and you're 3-0. What's it been like at the Holden Centre?
At the Holden Centre, it's been pretty hectic, and I think that's probably across the board, just with all this COVID stuff happening half. And I think one of your girls had it pretty early on. There's been a lot of adversity thrown at a lot of clubs for us. COVID wasn't a surprise, but probably the biggest thing is when Bree did go down and do her ACL, that kind of shook the whole AFLW community, as did those other players that went down. So, yeah, it shook us, but I think we've matured since last year even, and we just know how to handle the pressure. And I mean, it's going to be hard to do it without Bree, but it's not something that's impossible. So we've been kind of getting around each other and have an understanding that it's not about trying to replace Bree. It's just trying to everybody take their opportunities and find another gear within themselves.
So for those that aren't perhaps as emotionally invested in the competition like you and I are, what does Bree do that other players just don't do? Why is she so different and so important to this team?
It just seems that every time she gets the footy, something happens, and it's 9.5 out of 10 times that Bree Davey gets the football, something magical happens. She's played sport from a young age, so she's like quite a well-built athlete. She's not an Erin Phillips type, but she is so strong, and she keeps her feet at the contest. She's got an elite kick, elite hands, and I think even the biggest asset she brings is off the field. She's 26, but she relates to a lot of people, and she's just kind of someone that when they enter the room, it kind of impacts everybody, and then when they're not there, you really feel that presence missing. So she's just honestly an elite footballer, and there's no replacing Bree Davey.
I just wanted to ask you, Chloe, about having COVID as an athlete and getting over the other side of it and being able to play again. Take us through what that was like for you as an experience, because obviously more and more people are getting it, but for someone that's lived it, what's it like?
Yeah, Whitey, I wasn't shocked when I got it. I knew it was kind of coming, and it just depends on when it was going to hit me. And I said from the start, if I managed to dodge it through the season, I should go buy myself a lottery ticket. But I ended up getting it in just before round two. So I kind of had expected that I was going to get it, so I wasn't actually too disappointed. And there was nothing I couldn't make the RAT test unpositive or the PCR test unpositive. So I kind of just had to set a plan in place, and that's how my head kind of worked. So I wanted something to do every day, and it was based off how you felt. And I was actually pretty good symptom-wise. I'm probably feeling it a little bit more now after the 7 days isolation than I did in the 7 days. But for me, and I know a lot of people are different, Emma Carney came out and said that she's still struggling with it. But I was just more tired. Physical activity made me tired pretty quickly than it usually does. And I wasn't able to kick footy. I live in a small apartment. It's a two-bedroom apartment, and I can't kick or run anywhere. So I only did one captain's run coming out of it. But was clogged. I probably, in my individual experience, suffered from FOMO more than I did from COVID, because I hated sitting in a small apartment, and I think that added to it too, is humans aren't meant to be locked up in little apartments, so that kind of got to me a bit, but the girls were great. I had a lot of them offer to drop around coffees, which that little small act and gesture kind of made your whole day, because, yeah, there wasn't really much else going on.
Yeah, but I mean, I want to sort of explore that a little bit more about it. It's not just the illness, but it's the fact that you've got to stop for 7 days. Yeah. And if you're a busy person, both physically and in the mind, and then you just can't do anything, I would imagine your whole life sort of loses momentum there for a while. It takes a while to get going. I mean, I know my mum and dad have had COVID, and my dad was just going crazy because he was just stuck in the house for 2 weeks and couldn't do anything more than the actual illness.
Yeah, well, the club dropped a bike around, but yeah, it literally, for 7 days, it was like, not that you didn't exist, but you were so removed from the yep. world, and you felt like everything was happening around you, and you felt like the world was changing and you were stuck inside, when really it wasn't. But, yeah, coming back out of it, it's a lot, because you go from literally just sleeping in and trying to waste as much of the day doing nothing and sleeping as long as you can, and coming back out. And, like, I probably stand still a little bit clogged, so it's even afterwards, you can feel symptoms up for months afterwards, I think. So, yeah, it, like I said, it's literally, you think the world's changing around you as you're stuck inside for 7 days. But, yeah, I kind of am glad I've had it, though, because it was a lot of stress and anxiety trying to dodge it. And actually having it, in a way, makes me feel a little bit better, and it's one stress taken out of my life.
Yeah, good point.
So you'll be under the pump next little week, though, because the fixture re-released yesterday. You're playing Thursday night at Vic Park against Fremantle, Tuesday night at Vic Park against West Coast, and then next Sunday against Brisbane in Brisbane, I think it is. So you've got your work cut out. Will that affect your availability, just with coming off the back of this virus?
No, it hasn't, and I haven't. Steve hasn't. My coach hasn't mentioned anything to me. I should be all good. I'll be managed through, and you know, it's just this short condensed season is just something that we've kind of got to deal with. And half, you're probably not shocked that, you know, wow, we've had a condensed season come up, because it was just inevitable, and it was just what state it was going to happen in first. But look, I'll probably, the Thursday to Tuesday turnaround, I might not do as much, and I know we might not have as many senior players or sore bodies doing as much as what others are doing. So just to ensure that we're fit, because, you know, we've had a longer pre-season. We've seen more injuries. We had another ACL, and now we've got short turnaround games. I'm a little bit concerned for probably the health and safety of the players, but you just got to kind of put the trust in the clubs that they're not going to set us up for failure. But, yeah, I do worry about short turnarounds in the AFL, because we're just, It's foreign to us, and we've never had to do it before.
That was the case with the Melbourne AFLW team. We'd never hear from them because they're yet to lose. Mick Dineen would be pretty happy about that, I reckon. He's the coach. He joins us on the line. Mick, good morning.
Morning, Half. Morning, Whitey. Thanks for having us.
Good on you, buddy. You haven't got one of those we'll only speak when we lose policies going on, have you, at the D's?
That's clever from Scarlett. No, I'm not quite that smart, I don't think.
Well, you're pretty smart, and your players are pretty smart. It's been a great start to the season. Defeated the Bulldogs, the Tigers and the Saints across the weekend in a pretty tense affair up until that last quarter. What have you made of the start of the season for your team?
I think we're pleased to be in winning form. I think we seem to have had, you know, some good quarters in each of those three rounds that have been able to be the difference in the game. So we feel like there's some promising signs there, but still plenty of work to do. I think, yeah, the weekend was largely a scrappy affair. Like, both teams were competing well, but probably the fundamentals wouldn't have been overly entertaining to watch. But, yeah, we sort of ended up being able to do enough in that last quarter to put a gap between us and the Saints.
You have an uncanny knack, Mick, and have done for pretty much since the start of the competition, of being able to kick goals in bunches, punches in bunches, and you kick five or six a quarter. You do that quite often. Is that system, or is that just the players getting on top and their flair shining through?
Yeah, I reckon it's the two coming together.
And probably, yeah, what we're trying to do is just have those moments more consistently. But, I think it's just everything coming together and the players being predictable to one another. And then that sort of spirit and energy gets going, and then it translates to, you know, multiple goals in a short space of time. But, yeah, we're trying to be a better team than that and be more consistent. So we haven't quite nailed it so far this season, but we're hoping to keep chipping away and, yeah, not just have, you know, a burst or a good quarter, but, you know, a half or three quarters or four quarters where we're, you know, being consistent with the way we're going.
You might have half answered the question already, but for a team that's been close over the last couple of years, what are you wanting to see from your team to be confident that you can take that next level and get into a grand final and be a chance at being premiers?
Yeah, I think, similar, just that consistency of the way we play, but then a large part is probably the instruction on field and problem solving, and because each game throws up different scenarios and there's some there's some intelligent players in the competition and there's some great coaching. So, yeah, the players need to be able to sort of think for themselves on field and, you know, adjust to what the game's presenting. So I feel like our core group has had a lot of time together. So we're starting to get into that space where we can think our way through games and, you know, potentially if it's holding on to a lead or, you know, we need to win the game with 5 minutes to go. So, we're looking for growth from our team in that space. And we think if we can keep competing well, and our fundamentals are at a level, and hopefully we're good enough at the back end of the season to be winning some games.
We spoke to Kate Roffey yesterday, the president of the footy club, and she talked about the impact of winning the premiership and what it's meant to so many people, etc., which is obviously obvious. But just, I'm interested, has it sort of spilled over into your team, just that good feeling and potentially momentum that can go from the men's team into the women's team?
Yeah, I think it has. Like, I guess when the grand final was on last year, there wasn't a lot happening back in Melbourne, so it was certainly a good outlet and a good bit of inspiration for our group to watch the boys and their pathway. I know I started coaching, and our women's program started when Simon Goodwin took over the reins from Paul Ruse as head coach. So there's been some similarities with, you know, how the groups are evolving and the ups and downs. So to watch the boys' season and their application and the way their leaders went about driving standards, I think there's been some shared learnings and definitely some inspiration. And the girls have taken a bit out of that. And we feel like the boys have now got a vested interest in and hopefully seeing the girls succeed and, putting some time into our group as well, which has been nice.
Seemingly, there's some adjustments to the fixture. Obviously, there's adjustments to the fixture announced yesterday. But are you expecting your team to be impacted by any changes in the next couple of weeks, or is that still yet to be known?
Yeah, yet to be known at this point. But I think it'd be safe to say we're all going to be impacted at some point. It is nice to know that the season will go ahead, and then you sort of just need to be prepared to shift. Obviously, yeah, you're up to the Gold Coast tonight, on a quick turnaround. Sort of anticipating that coming our way, it's hard to think too far ahead at the moment. But yeah, definitely, it's nice to know we're going to get a season away and just be ready when it's your turn.
And what about this week for you, Mick? Because you got Adelaide at Norwood Oval. Now Adelaide are one of the other teams who are undefeated. We spoke to Chloe from the Magpies, who are sitting in that position as well. Fremantle too, and they've got the Magpies on Thursday night. So one of those teams will lose a game. But you've got Adelaide, which is a huge challenge any time of year, anywhere. But they seem to be in pretty hot form. What's standing out for you about the Crows so far?
Yeah, well, I think they're contest game. So their mids are obviously getting good supply out of the middle, but they're an excellent, you know, intercept and turnover team from their back half. So I know in the prelim last year, we just really struggled with how we used the ball going forward and it just played directly into their hands. So hopefully we're using the ball a little smarter going forward and challenging their defenders with some good one-on-ones. And, if we can compete at ground level and take our opportunities in front of goal, we'd like to think we can push them this week. But, certainly they seem to have their game up and going, and we're going to need to be at our best. But, we haven't played at Norwood yet.
In a fairly quiet summer of golf in Australia, 22 past 8 on a Tuesday morning, there's been plenty of action in Queensland in the last couple of weeks. I reckon Anthony Quayle's pretty happy about that. He won the PGA, the Queensland PGA, on the weekend. He joins us on the line. Anthony, good morning.
Gentlemen, how are we?
We are well, mate. Nice to have you with us. Is it nice to be playing tournament golf again?
It's good. I play a little bit up in Japan as well, so I spent the majority of my season in Japan last year, but Had an extended break over Christmas and things like that, and back into it at the start of this year.
So coming into the last couple of weeks, were you confident you'd be playing well?
To be honest, I got COVID the week before the Aussie PGA, so I was kind of, I spent the week locked up and pretty poor kind of preparation. So my expectations were pretty low. I just tried to enjoy myself and, yeah, played pretty nicely.
So did you sort of do a lot of putting inside in the house in your week, and then all of a sudden you started rolling butts last week?
Yeah, that's right. It was sort of, you know, like it was 5 o'clock somewhere and I could sort of just putt whatever I wanted. So maybe that's the key.
Yeah, but maybe the key also is the whole thing around expectations. Because I think we've spoken to quite a few athletes that have either had COVID or the setbacks of the logistics of the last 2 years, and they've gone and won something or done something really well because the expectation actually to perform really well wasn't there.
Yeah, look, I think there's something to it. I think at times we probably get a little bit sort of pedantic about it, maybe try to be too perfect a lot of the time, and then if it doesn't go that way, we tend to lower those expectations because you haven't prepared how you've always trained to prepare.
Yep.
So, yeah, look, I guess there might be something to it. I might have to try and incorporate it. I don't know if I can just go get COVID every time before I get up, but I can do something.
It was a crazy final round, Anthony. You double bogey the first hole with a nice lead, and then all of a sudden, you know, you've got no lead, and then all of a sudden it went back out to six again, I think it was, and then back down, and you finally got there. But it was a true roller coaster.
It sure was, yeah. It was probably a little bit more entertaining for everybody than I was hoping. But it was a lot of fun. The two guys I was playing with, Louis and Justin, were both quality players. I knew they would make a push, and I gave up a little bit of ground early, which kind of got their foot in the door, and they both took advantage. So, just had to hang in there pretty strong and try to ride it out as long as I could.
So you kind of created a bit of history in that you've now won the Queensland Open and the Queensland PGA in your career. Well, I think Peter Senior and Greg Norman might be the only two that have done that as well. But just winning last week, what does that mean? As Huff said, there's not as many golf tournaments around, unfortunately, this summer. But does it get you entitlements anywhere? I know you play in Japan, but just from winning?
Yeah, so it does a couple of things. On our money list for the season, top three will get a European Tour card for next year. So there's obviously a fair bit of incentive there.
Yeah.
And I think top five gets us to the final stage of the Korn Ferry Tour School in America at the end of the year. So while I've got my Japan Tour status, I would really love to push for Europe or America at the end of this year. So that was a nice step last week.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're 6 strokes in the lead after the third round. So basically the tournament's yours. Pretty straightforward. That's what I would say, Anthony. Now, it's a bit different world than the world of professional golf. You double bogey the first and your partner birdies 2, 3, and 4, and all of a sudden it's down to 1. What are you thinking?
All that was going through my head at the time was I thought 6 shots might last you a little longer, Q. but unfortunately, they didn't. So, you know, I sort of made a mistake down the first and didn't quite recover well enough. And then it probably just stunned a bit of momentum for me. And Justin took full advantage. He was 4 under through 5 holes and was looking really good. Probably could have been 5 under through 5 and actually taken the lead, but he got into a share of the lead with me, and then he made a couple of mistakes. I made a couple of really good birdies. I think it went back out to 5 or 6. And then on the back nine, Louis started to push, sort of middle of the back nine, and I made another bogey. And so I think it was back down to 1 or 2. And then Louis sort of tapered off. I kind of made another birdie. And then Daniel Gale, who ended up coming second, come home pretty strong as well. So yeah, it was pretty entertaining, that's for sure.
So to those moments, I mean, you could quite easily have collapsed then when you had this lead and it's dissipated within 4 holes. It could have been very easy just to throw, oh, this is too hard, it's not my day, and I'll just collapse. You didn't, and you kept fighting, you were able to keep shooting birdies and hitting the scoreboard and making the other players under pressure. Do you use that as a real growth opportunity to know that you can now in those situations keep fighting and find a way?
Yeah, for sure. Look, to be honest, I kind of just, I'm normally sort of pretty upbeat and kind of just enjoy, I'm really lucky to do what I do and I kind of just enjoy it. I enjoy working hard at it. So when it happened, I tried to make as much light of it, you know, as possible. So when my lead was gone that quickly, you know, you're pretty, you could get pretty upset about it and pretty frustrated about it. But I kind of just said to myself what I just said to you guys, that I thought it might last me a little longer, just to try and make a bit of light of it and just try have a bit of a laugh and then kind of move on. And I think that just helped settle me down a little bit for the rest of the day.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.